Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 5 from the Remember to Breathe podcast. Before we start today's podcast, I'd like just to invite you all to take a moment to stop what you're doing and come and join me and take a breath. Today, we're going to be doing a little technique called the physiological sigh. We'll be breathing in through the nose, deep into the belly, allowing it to expand. And then at the very top, we're going to take another sip. So you're going to breathe in slowly, take another sip at the top, and then let it go with a really nice sigh. Really allow your body to let go through the throat. So if you can, like I said, stop what you're doing. Maybe just put stuff down for a moment. If you can, sit down and just close down your eyes for a moment. And just relax. All the things you need to do today and all the things you should have done, just let them go for a moment. If you feel any tension in your body, just again, let it go. And together now, we're going to do 3 breaths in with this physiological sigh and exhaling through the mouth with a sigh. Together now, let's begin. And again. And one more time. And just relax. Take a moment to become aware of how you're feeling right now, and when you're ready, open your eyes. Thank you so much for joining me and joining us today with that little breathwork technique as well as the episode. And the physiological sigh has been proven in a recent studies of breathing techniques is the fastest activating for your parasympathetic nervous system. So that is the kind of thing you can do when you're feeling stressed, if you've been, you know, on the computer for a long time, if you're feeling triggered, if your kids have annoyed you, just try. I ask you to get curious and try doing 3 breaths, doing 5 breaths, doing 10 breaths. See how it feels in your body as you let go. And if you, I kind of imagine with this breathing technique, it's a little bit like, you know, when you've had a long day and then you sit on the sofa or you relax, your body does that. No, you kind of take a big breath in and then you let it all out. And that's your way for your body to regulate your nervous system back to rest and digest. So on today's episode, we're going to be mixing it up a little bit. We're not going to be going against anything we've done for a workshop. We're just going to be having a conversation, which I think we're both excited for and a little bit nervous because it's a little less planned, but I think we can talk fine. But today we're going to be going on the topic of habits, coping mechanisms, and addiction. And that can seem like quite heavy and quite a big subject to be going over, but we're going to be sharing our experiences, what we've learned with the brain, with how habits work, with the psychology behind all this, so we can really share and understand that you are making a choice in every day, and your habits do make you who you are, and sometimes that can feel like we don't have control over that. But we are, I think our intention today is to try and break that down and allow you to know that you do have a choice in every moment. So I just want to read one thing to you, which was, I wrote into Google, what is a habit? And I love this sentence that came up. A habit is any regularly repeated behavior that requires little or no thought and is learned rather than innate. I'm going to say that little section again. Any regularly repeated behavior that requires little or no thought and is learned rather than innate. And I want you to take that last bit there. It is learned rather than innate. Your habits aren't, you're not born with them. They're learned behavior. And if we think, okay, if something's learned, it can be unlearned just as easily. Not that easily, but just as easily with effort. And then it carries on to say a habit, which can be part of any activity ranging from eating and sleeping to thinking and reacting, is developed through reinforcement and repetition. I'm going to say that one more time. A habit, which can be part of any activity ranging from eating and sleeping to thinking and reacting, is developed through reinforcement and repetition. Okay, so that's how the brain works, reinforcement and repetition. So if you want to learn something or unlearn something, it's going to take your attention, reinforcement, and repetition. And by breaking these down, we can start to empower ourselves and really understand that sometimes we feel like our habits are us and we don't have any control, but we really do. The second part I briefly want to go over is the power of your mind. So every day you make conscious decisions. You choose to do things throughout your day. And when you repeat something over and over and over again, your brain recognizes this pattern and kind of marks it like, oh, we do this a lot. So I'm going to take this from your conscious mind and I'm going to put it in your subconscious mind on autopilot. And that's a great way to save energy and be more efficient, because it's kind of like, it's noted we do these things all the time. So it's going to make your life easier. You're not going to have to think about it. You can just do it. I had a lovely explanation the other day, which was like, your conscious mind is the software and the programs you run off, and your subconscious is your hard drive. So that's a really nice analogy of how to think about it. So whatever you repeat over and over and over will get stored into your subconscious mind, and you'll kind of run off autopilot. And you can think about the things you do in a day, when you get up, you make your tea, when you eat, when you talk. When we're talking, we're thinking about what we're saying, but we're not actively thinking about doing these things. It's not a conscious effort. And then one final thing that I really love about the subconscious mind is that it has no positive or negative. Your subconscious mind doesn't know the difference, what's good for you, what's bad for you, what's healthy for you, what's unhealthy. And I'm using binary terms here to keep it simple. So it relies on your conscious mind to make those decisions. So I could wake up every day and I could decide that I'm going to wake up, I'm going to have a cup of tea, and I'm going to have a cigarette. I do that every day. It becomes a habit. It becomes part of my lifestyle, my routine. It becomes a part of who I am. Or I could decide to wake up every day, have a cup of tea, and go for a run. It again becomes a habit. There's no positive or negative, and I'm not saying that, well, smoking is worse than running, but you know what I mean. I'm not saying judgment on here. I'm giving you two opposite things. It is up to you to make a conscious effort every day to decide what you want to be doing, what you don't want to be doing, and how that's going to give you more energy, take away your energy, how that is benefiting you on the long run. This doesn't also have to be with things we do. It can also be with intrusive thoughts, with people pleasing, for example. If you are a people pleaser and that is your autopilot response, setting a boundary is going to be really hard, really, really difficult. So it's important to know that when we make these changes, it is going to be a little bit difficult, but it's also possible. So after sharing that information, my intention with that is just to empower you to realize that you can create a separation from what you're doing and not attach so much to our daily habits, and start to make a choice of what we're doing, what we're not doing, and why we're doing things. And Angelo, I'd love to pass it to you, and maybe if you can share a little bit about what resonates with you with habits.
So this is a very interesting topic that when I started the whole transformation thing, which was something I really looked into, and I enjoyed tackling it. So for me, when it came to habits, a lot of people associate, even myself, I associated like a lot of behaviors I had with who I was, or that is me, or like you mentioned, I thought it was innate, that I had no control over it, that's my personality, I need to accept it. But what I came to understand by learning more about habits was that you make choices, they become habits, then when you do it long enough, they become behaviors, and that becomes your lifestyle. And that becomes, in a sense, who you are, because that's your lifestyle, the way you live. So that really shifted my perspective on it, and I knew I had somewhat of control, and things I didn't like about myself, I had the possibility of changing. And another thing you mentioned about it being not, when it becomes a habit, it's not a conscious effort. And that's very interesting, because I had a conversation with a friend of mine recently, and she was asking me how because I'm so like stuck to my habits and I'm stubborn with what I do, she asked like, how do I stick to habits? And she mentioned how she tried something for, because we are told that after 21 days it becomes a habit. She said she did something for 21 days and it didn't become a habit. And like, so that was kind of a lie in her head. But for me, I had a different narrative of that you can't do something for 21 days and it becomes autopilot, where it's a like an unconscious decision. It's still a conscious decision, but just the effort you put into it becomes less effort. Like it's less of an effort that you need to put into it. So that's what a habit turns into. So it's always you need to figure out the way of that action you want to make a habit. You consciously do it for, let's say it takes 21 days, you do it for the 21 days, but there has to be that sense of joy in doing it and seeing the value in doing it. It can't be like, oh, okay, like this is a burden, but I'm going to do it for 21 days and then it's going to stick. Where like, I'll just wake up and it'll happen. Like that is not the way a habit works. It's still a conscious decision, but it's like a subconscious effort. It's not a conscious effort where it becomes so ingrained in your brain, like you mentioned, that you can even close your eyes and do it. But still you have to like tell yourself to do it. Like it's a decision you make, like, okay, am I going to do it or not? Like recently, I went on a trip to Kandy for one of my friend's weddings. And because my environment changed, my morning routine, that habit was somewhat disrupted because I didn't have my specific cues. Or I couldn't close my eyes and do it because I was in a different environment. So like understanding elements like that, so there I didn't do my morning routine and it didn't feel right to me because it felt weird, but then I didn't put pressure on myself for not doing it. I was like, okay, different environment, let's experiment and try something new, and brought in some change. But then when I came back, it was very easy to get back to that routine because my environment was the same again. So I feel like there are a lot of cues that lead to habit, like your environment, how much effort is put into creating the habit, like whether, like you mentioned, if it's an old habit and you want to change the habit, it's like how much barrier is there towards the new habit versus the old, and that will determine what you would lean towards. Because another thing I learned about habits is that you can never get rid of a habit, you always replace it. So if you're, let's say for an example, smoking, if you're trying to stop smoking, you can't stop smoking because that is kind of an action, like that's a coping mechanism, right? Like either you're stressed or feeling overwhelmed and your habit is to go to smoking. That's your like source of comfort in. So you need to replace it with something, because then when you feel overwhelmed, you won't have the thing to like soothe yourself, right? The self-soothing. You won't have that activity. So you need to find a replacement. So there are a lot of things like that that were very interesting and we'll go deeper into throughout the system. But for me, habits was very interesting, and it's fun to play around with when you know you have control over it, that you can actually influence your habits and your way of life and your way of living. And it starts from the choices that become the habits. And I feel like that became very interesting, because previously I was so convinced that I am who I am, I can't change that, I need to accept it, and I wasn't too happy with that. So that was a very interesting, like, learning about habits brought me to that realization that I can take control of who I am and who I become, but it takes effort.
Yeah, I think it's that kind of realizing you have control, or you can take control, or you have a choice. Yeah. It's very much the same, especially in my 20s, it was very much, this is what life is, and this is what you do, and this is who you are. Mm. It was kind of like, these are the things, I don't know, it felt like there wasn't a choice, and you're just very tunneled in, and whether you like it or not, that you're lumped with it and you're stuck with it. And now it's kind of like this broadened perspective of kind of like, what am I choosing every day and how does that affect me? And for me, it always comes back to like, does that give me energy or does it take away energy from me? And a really lovely one about like trying to reinforce a habit is my partner and I have finally, we went to the gym religiously for like 6 months and then it dwindled off, as it always does. Life comes in the way or something, and we took a few months off and I think he cut his finger and we couldn't go, like all these things happened, and then we're like, we need to go back again. And like to go back 3 times a week is like set that rhythm. Okay, we need to create this habit. And I realized in my mind, this isn't going to happen if I fill my days. This is the new thing that we're bringing in. I need to leave space for that because a lot of resistance is going to come up. Even yesterday, you know, we're a little bit late and I'm the first to crumble. I'm like, should we just stay at home? And he's like, don't. And I'm like, we could just, like, I choose what I'm doing, but there's that feeling like when you don't have to do what you've chosen, like skipping school or like having a substitute teacher, you know, you feel like you've got away with something, but I'm like, Jess, you're making these decisions for you. But it's like realizing like, okay, the resistance will come up. And I feel that resistance, like, oh, I don't want to do it. And like we say, we tend to attach to that and think that I don't want to do it. I'm lazy. I'm a disappointment. I'm a failure. But the thing we have to teach ourselves is that's just the resistance. Because our brain, the subconscious mind, the reptilian brain is like our most primal part of our brain. It wants to keep us in our familiar. It wants to stay in the path of least resistance. So when you're making a new habit, it is really hard and a lot of resistance comes up and you don't want to do it. And as soon as you detach from it, and it can kind of be a little bit comical, you can be like, oh, resistance is coming up. I'm just going through change. That's okay. I feel the resistance. I honor the resistance. I'm feeling a bit dysregulated with it. I'm feeling stressed or overwhelmed. That's okay. If I just show up and keep at what I'm doing, I know that I'm not going to say the word discipline because I don't have a good relationship with that word, but I'm going to say the commitment and the consistency, like the rest will take care of itself. If I show up 3 times a week, my fitness will improve because of that. I don't need to focus on how I can make my fitness better. I need to focus on creating that habit.
Mm. And I think for me, something that was important to realize us as humans, even we are creatures of habit. Like, whether we like it or not, there's this notion of, a lot of people have asked me in terms of like, oh, when you have all these like strict habits or rules for yourself, don't you feel restricted? Like you're not letting yourself like be free or go with the flow? And for me, the idea behind it is that since we're creatures of habit, it's either we choose the habits we want or it's chosen for us. So the idea of going with the flow is more like I'm letting someone else decide my habits or what the decisions I'm going to make are. But for me, I'm stubborn with it in a sense because I want to be the one who makes those decisions. Because then I am paving the way for my future, who I am as a person. I'm strongly deciding or influencing that. I'm not influenced by my external environment or the people around me to a certain extent. If I go with the flow, I'm basically like saying, okay, you decide it for me and I'll do whatever you decide. There is no sense of like, these are my values, I'm going to stick by them. And then you start losing that trust with yourself as well. And this is something that I've been working on and still am. I am someone who has like, I try to control my environment a lot. Previously, like I tried to control things that I couldn't control, that were out of my control. And I used to look at people who go with the flow and I used to feel really jealous because I need to have my day planned and like nothing can change from that. There can't be anything spontaneous. I need to know my day at the start of the day or day before and that's the way my day is going to be. But then my brother and my cousin are very go with the flow kind of people. And my cousin is like the extreme. Like he can just make up his mind and do it that second itself. And I used to be very envious and confused as to like, how is that possible? Because I can't seem to wrap my head around how you do that or how you accomplish that. Because like you said, for me, that was the normal. And that was the truth of like, I need it all planned out for that to happen. Otherwise, like, it's very stressful. It's not that I physically can't do it. It's just like so much stress that I don't enjoy spontaneity. But for him, it's like, if it's planned, like, he feels restricted. So like, for me, I had control when it was planned. So that was something that when I came into the idea of like, oh, trying to control my habits, I was like, I need to understand why there is that difference. And how do I find that middle ground of what can I control and what do I need to go with the flow? So understanding that what's in my control are my choices and decisions, like on the everyday, which is my habits, the habits I create, only then become my behaviors. So understanding what I can control, which is my choice and decisions, and then going with the flow with everything else external, which is whether it's the weather, whether it's, say, plans changing, whether it's other people, because I can't control other people. Like, they can have different decisions. And, like, making a plan, you can, last minute, and you don't feel like it. And, like, I can't get annoyed with that because I have no control over your feelings and your decisions. So I need to learn to go with the flow, which was very difficult at the start. But then consistently doing it and reminding myself that, look, you don't have control over that. You don't know what's going on in their life. You don't know that situation. That's a big uncertainty. So, okay, now what's the situation that you have control over? So you had planned, say, 2 hours to go for something. Now you have 2 hours. What are you going to do? Like, so then that stress goes away where I'm trying to control the, like, okay, now, like, I don't know what to do. Like, I have no say in this. Like, am I supposed to try and push them to see if they want to go? Like, just accepting what the situation is and seeing my options there. And I think that's a big thing, talking about choice as well, because there is this book called Paradox of Choice. Can't remember the author's name, but he made me understand the idea of choice that helped me stop stressing about my choices. Because he talks about how if we have no choice at all, you are given, told this is the only thing you can do, you feel like you have lost control, right? There is your, how do you say it? You're like stuck in a sense. There is no control from your aspect. There's no autonomy. But then if you have choices, like, you feel that freedom of, oh, I have some control of my life. You have that autonomy. But then when you have too many choices, you get overwhelmed. Where you get paralyzed in a sense. Where it's like so many choices that it's overwhelming to make a decision. So it was like understanding that sweet spot as well. So that, because for me what was happening is when a plan gets canceled, I have too many options of what I can do. Too many choices. So that was what was overwhelming. So then understanding, okay, like, limit yourself to like 3 choices. You have 2 hours. What are 3 things you enjoy? You already, since you have the habit of it, you know what you enjoy. So those are the kind of things you straight away go to. Okay, I can do either one of these 3 things. So then when you think of it like that, it's not that like I have an abundance of choice. 2 hours, I can do anything. You tend to go to the easiest thing there, where it's like go on my phone, go doom scroll, or, you know, watch some video to kill the time. It's like, what action can I take that I feel will be productive? And those have to be rehearsed ahead of time and like pre-prepared so that you have those 3 options when things that are overwhelming come about. So I think like habits like that, learning about choice, I think the more information you have on the possibility of this, it opens up the way you can experiment with it because you're informed. So I think that was, for me, understanding the paradox of choice was what led to me being able to take control of my habits and making my choices much easier. And the habits also then become a bit less effortless and overwhelming.
I love the choice. And like, for me, I'm a very naturally indecisive person. And it follows me wherever I go. Now I've befriended it. But even not making a choice is a choice. And I remember the first time I heard that and I was like, fuck, that's my life. Like, you feel like, I'm not making a choice. Like, everyone's making choices for me, or I don't choose. Life just happens to me. But when that moment I heard, like, even not making a choice is a choice, I was like, oh my gosh, I got to look at my own stuff because I am making a choice by not choosing. And I think it's definitely that overwhelm, right? Like, the way you describe that, that we all try and control things. Like, for me, it was more about, instead of controlling like people or things, it was like trying to control my environment, like trying keeping this like safety, this hub. When I was a lot younger, in my 20s, I've managed to like stop it now. I'd obsessively clean. Even when I'd finish work at 2 o'clock in the morning after I had a bar job during uni, I'd finish at 2 o'clock in the morning, I'd come home clean. And my boyfriend at the time, one day I came back from work and he's like, I've cleaned the house, but I know you're going to clean it anyway. And I, no joke, cleaned again. Because it was like that element of control. something in me, my nervous system is dysregulated or going, I often find that it takes a lot of effort for me to go from one environment to another. I've got better at learning how to regulate through that, but if I would go traveling and then come home, it takes a while for me to ground back into being home. But I would just obsessively clean to try and grasp this element of control. And like we said about the mind and the reptilian brain, like, control comes from fear. And if you think about, you know, the levels of control we try and do, and we're like, when the control goes, that overwhelm comes in, and it's like you said, it's too many possibilities. And, you know, that is like the perfect example of today's society. You know, there are too many possibilities, too many options, all on our fingertips. So this overwhelm and this anxiety around it, I truly understand why so many people suffer from the too many choices. There are too many choices. And that's why it's really powerful what you said about the fact that you rehearse backups. So the most important thing, if we know the mind works through repetition, is also rehearsal. Okay, this scenario is going to happen. I know this is a trigger point for me or a weak spot within my nervous system. If it doesn't go that way, what three things could I do that are good, like that will benefit me to regulate? Okay, I'll go for a walk. You know, say I'm going to have a stressful day at work today. What can I do afterwards to regulate? And go for a walk. Maybe if I've got a bit more time, I can meet a friend for a coffee. Or maybe I'm just going to read a book, like, and have them there rehearse. This is my backup. Because there's this kind of expectation that we kind of think that we just have to be like gifted with an idea or just know. But no, like, anything takes practice. Any person who is good and excels at anything rehearses and practices. So we should do the same with our brain and allow it, like, that rehearsal. You repeat something again and again and again, it just gets easier. So allow your grace that kind of like, okay, what is my backup for when I feel really dysregulated? And for a lot of time, especially during my 20s, I had a lot of confusion, a lot of, let's say, I think it comes back to the idea of like numbing. Like, I spent a lot of time trying to understand who I was through drugs, alcohol, and just general kind of that realm. And I think it's kind of like, it allowed me to detach, and all the things that I couldn't communicate, it almost allowed me to be someone else in those moments. And like, that's an example of how an unhealthy habit can equally regulate your nervous system. Like, for those moments, I felt regulated. The stress, the noise, the everything that was going on in my life that I hadn't learned to communicate was gone. But then the after effects of those things and those chemicals in your body, that's where it comes into play. Now I've managed to, like you say, replace those things with things that are better for me. I still get the same release. I still get the things, but it even takes that time and investment to make healthier choices, like what's going to give me more energy in the long run and what's going to deplete me. Because if you've had a stressful day, you're going to come home, you're going to have two glasses of wine, you are going to feel better. But then the choices we make or how you feel the next morning may not be the same, when rather than you have the tools of like, I don't had a stressful day, I'm going to go for a walk for 30 minutes, I'm going to watch the sunset, and then I'm going to go home and like not be too much on technology. Like, you're going to feel better one way or the other.
I think it's nice to talk about the aspect of addiction as well. So when it comes to addiction, I feel like it's not just, because a lot of times addiction is related to drugs, alcohol, and smoking.
Yeah, we think someone in a room like
themselves. And we like, say like drug addict. But
yeah,
addiction can, any behavior that you become dependent on is an addiction. It can even be to the realm of where we think it's positive. Like, a lot of people who are in society successful and like good on their path of earning money, in a sense, they're coping with something and they're addicted to that, let's say, that habit or that lifestyle, right? That can be an addiction as well. It can be around food. Even working out can be an addiction. Because a lot of people who go through traumatic experiences in life, always, like most of them, tend to go to the gym. Like, that is the first way of releasing, or the coping mechanism you mentioned, right? So it's that idea, and that can become an addiction, because it's like you're trying to escape something by doing that activity and making that habit. And when you don't have it, it's like a drug. Like, you feel withdrawal symptoms and like you feel overwhelmed again, and you kind of need that fix to this thing. So it can go with food, whether it's shopping, whether it's, you know, clothes, it can be anything. So I think any behavior or habit can end up being an addiction. So it's rather than just looking at what addictions you can lean to that are productive for you or you feel like bring you joy, but without the kind of negative effects in the long run. So I feel like it's just that, because like you mentioned, there is no positive and negative to our minds and to our bodies. It's just whether how it impacts you in the long run and how it impacts, say, parts of your life that you feel are important. Like for some people, they don't find relationships that important and they would prefer to go down the path of, like, you know, traveling, exploring themselves, making new friends, seeing new places. So, like, then what are the habits you can develop to pursue those? But then also exploring the other avenues to see if, to, like, to reassure yourself whether that actually brings you joy or you have just told yourself without even trying it that that is not going to bring you joy. So I feel that, like, that's very interesting to specify about addiction, where we look at it with a very negative connotation, but it's like just repeated habits that you get hooked onto or depend on, in a sense, become an addiction. Like a lifestyle can be an addiction because you are kind of hooked on repeating that habit over and over to accomplish a certain outcome. So I think that's how I look at addiction, rather than it just having its negatives. And then it comes to the point of me being able to, okay, what are the behaviors I would like to have and the lifestyle I would like to have? So then that is what I kind of addict myself to, right? That's the choice I make to go down, to have the behavior that I repeat so much that it becomes like an addiction, but not to the point where it's detrimental and I can't live without it kind of thing. That's where you need to learn to, when a behavior goes to a lifestyle and you can't deviate from it. Like for example, going on that trip. Like, if I went on the trip and I couldn't be without doing my morning routine, that's something I need to worry about a bit. So where I need to get off that routine for a bit to have that change and kind of get over the withdrawal symptoms where I'm like clinging on to it. I need my fix kind of feeling. So when I went and I didn't do that, I felt the benefits of doing the morning routine. So when I came back, I could do it. But I didn't feel like, oh shit, I need to do the meditation. I need to do this in the morning. Like, I feel like I'm missing out on something. I didn't have that feeling, which was reassuring. And I was like, okay, I'm not to the point where this is, you know, holding you back and like preventing you from exploring or experimenting or being curious. You're just stuck with this and you're going with this. So that was kind of interesting. And I think everyone needs to, when they have habits, and even if they're good habits, see if they have got to that point of addiction with the habit. So then you can see if, like, okay, I need to detach myself from it a bit and then come back to it, so that you're not doing it out of, like, I need to do this. And, like, you're not enjoying the process of it. So where you can come to it with enjoyment, like, oh, I'm getting to do this. Like, yes, like, I'm making the choice to do this because I enjoy doing it. It's not like I'm making this decision to do this because I have to, because I know it's going to be a positive outcome. And you're going into it, like, with so much dread. So for me, that was going to the gym. I didn't enjoy that process because there was some detachment. There were benefits. Like, yes, I was, like, getting fit. I could stay healthy. But I wasn't doing it, like, joyfully. So then I was like, am I going to do this for the rest of my life? Like, where I'm going to push myself? So then finding something, like, where it's more in an open space, where it was yoga. That's what it landed on. But, like, the environment was suitable for me. The exercise was more suitable for me, where I... Now when I wake up and it's a day of yoga, I'm like, oh yes, like, I'm excited to go. It's not a dread of, like, I'm like, there is still the notion of I can sleep in bed, this is easier to do, more comfortable. But then if I think on it, I'm like, after yoga I always feel happy. Like, why would I not want to feel that? But if I sleep in a bit more, I'm gonna wake up groggy, and so the outcome is much more pleasurable than, like, making the decision of what I want to do right now. So I think those habits lead in, and, like, looking whether it goes into addiction is important. So I want to ask you what your, say, relationship or your understanding of addiction is and what you think about it.
I remember when I was, like, in my teens, my mom said to me, be careful, darling, you have an addictive personality. And I remember this, like, it's one of these core things that you just remember. And I remember, like, being a bit like, yeah, I have an addiction, I get into things and not truly understanding. And then addiction for me has manifested through many things throughout my life, from cigarettes to drinking to exercise to running to cleaning to, like, even at times breath work. Like, it has really been a process where I'm addicted, like, not anymore, but I was so addicted to doing that I didn't even know what rest was. And I think I can now look back on my life and kind of puzzle pieces all together. Like, growing up with a single parent household, I kind of took on the role as the peacemaker, keep mom happy, the doer, the helper. I was the helper. And I gained so much validation through that. I got, like, a buzz from it. Because realistically, an addiction is you are dependent on something outside of yourself to allow you to feel a certain way. Mm. Normally elated, right? It's normally a high, a rush, a something. And, you know, even with anything, we get then addicted to the chemicals that are released in our body or whatever. But I definitely noticed that I am easily not overwhelmed. I feel a lot, but I can be easily led by things because I'm, like, seeking. There's this part of me that's naturally seeking, and, you know, my partner's really helped me ground down in that and stop that and let that side of it go. You don't need to be seeking for everything. But addiction for me has, you know, you convince yourself that, oh, I no longer drink, I no longer smoke, but I have to do my meditation every day. I have to do my breath work. I have to do these things because, again, I'm outsourcing. I'm giving my power to these things that are going to make me feel better. And it just wastes your energy. It really, really wastes your energy. And as you know, I've gone through the lens of looking at my life and things that happened. And for me, it was really interesting how there's a lot to do with addiction and attunement to a child's attunement to the mother, and also this self-soothing. So attunement between the mother and child is when the mother learns to respond to a baby's needs. And because we're all completely different, how a mother responds, they have to learn how their child responds. And, you know, it's things like simple cooing, cuddling, you know, singing. Like, when a child can't self-soothe, it relies on its parent or caregiver to allow that nervous system to relax. Because when I always say about this, about 0 to 7 and your subconscious mind, like, we are sponges. We have these mirror neurons that are observing everything that's going on. We're learning through other people's responses. So that bond between mother and child or mother and primary caregiver is so important, because that's how we learn to build our nervous system. The nervous system of a child will relate back to the nervous system of the mother. And I'm not saying this is blame. Like, everyone is doing the best they can with what they have. But we can look back and see, for example, if a mother is particularly depressed after, you know, giving birth, or stressed, or has their own mental, you know, illness that they're dealing with, or any issues that they're dealing with, we can kind of see that, okay, maybe as a child, I didn't learn how to self-soothe so much. I didn't learn to regulate my emotions very well within. So there's actually a correlation between a child's ability to self-soothe and addiction, because you are outsourcing your nervous system regulation, whether that be drinking, smoking, running, shopping, binge eating. Like, it can be anything, but it's you outsourcing that regulation. Because when we're emotionally dysregulated, you know, you think about if anger comes over, or grief, or sadness, an emotion comes up. When we actually learn, an emotion comes up, we acknowledge it, we name it, we allow it to pass, and then we regulate ourselves. But because most of the time we're not taught that, an emotion comes up, we attach shame to it, we allow the emotion to drag us down, and then we just go off. So for me, drinking was the perfect way to not feel. Like, an emotion comes up, I can't articulate it. We didn't communicate in our family. No one talked about feelings. Everyone just got on with it. So if you can't name a feeling, it's really hard. And feelings hurt when you can't name them, because there's just so much attached to them. And we're so attached to, like, our own validation with it as well, that when we learn to know what the feeling is, we honor it, we respect it as something separate to ourselves, just an emotion, as I'm allowed to feel this way and I'm allowed to let it go, then we can let it pass. It isn't that simple. My journey of my life and getting, you know, this is what I perceive now through looking back. And at the time, it was never at all. And, you know, for me, it all stemmed from my one abandonment wound when my dad left. It all comes from that. It all comes from that 10-year-old girl that dad left, no one spoke about it, and that need to control and find the peace and like everything. It's just the nervous system dysregulation there is just like so much. And if you think about like a 10-year-old now and not explaining anything to them, I feel so much compassion towards that part of myself. And I can see the coping mechanisms that I took on to try and maintain that level of safety within my life.
It's interesting that you mentioned that you have an addictive personality, because I have come to the realization that I feel like I have too, because anything I, so like currently when I stay away from like gaming and stuff like Netflix and streaming platforms, not that they are bad at all, I don't believe they are bad at all, they are amazing, because gaming teaches so many things. And even the reason I came even to the creative aspect of stuff was through watching TV and like streaming stuff, right? But I know that I have such an addictive personality that if I start watching a show, I can't end it till I have watched all the episodes. And that gets, I mean, you can think that, oh, okay, I also have that binging thing, but for me, it's like I can't even sleep, because I know that there's another episode, I need to know what to watch it. Like, that I need to watch it, I need to know what happened. And even if it comes to a game, if there's like a story mode, I can't go to sleep because I have to end the game. And that's when like I come back to, oh, I can be productive with anything else. Because otherwise I'm so distracted that I can't focus on anything else. Like, for example, like, say a couple of years ago, I got a game. And I think my brother bought it for me for my birthday. And there was a story mode, and I took 3 days to finish it, and I went to sleep at, and this is me having my, like going through my schedule of sleeping at 10, waking up at 6, all of that. I slept at 3 in the morning and woke up at 6. And you'd think that, oh, okay, you still got like, you know, 3 hours of sleep and you went to sleep. Like that was because I was falling asleep. And the reason I went to sleep even was like, oh, I'll sleep and I, when I wake up, I can finish the rest of the game. Like, it's that bad to the point that I have to, like, since I know that, I have the knowledge of that, I have to stop myself from doing that. And I make it harder to play games, and, like, I don't have Netflix and stuff, like, harder to access streaming services. So that's not my quick fix when I'm overwhelmed. Because then I can just go down that rabbit hole, because it's making me feel good, right? It's, in a sense, like, an addiction. And I know this because I have had this from, like, my childhood as well. Like, watching, when I was smaller, there was no Netflix, there was no phones, there were no computers. Like, we got computers, like, later on. This is when I was in school, there was only the TV. And I'd sit through even the ads. Like, I was hooked on the TV, as if it was still a part of the show. Because, like, it's something that gave me that sense of interest or satisfaction, or, like, soothed me in a sense, that, like, I got hooked to it, and it was really hard for me to like not watch TV or like stop watching TV, because my mom would be like, look, you have watched for like 3-4 hours, like now do something else. Like, I can't even hear her most of the time, and like she has to come and scream into my ear for me to be like, wait, what, and like get out of that zone. But whereas like I know that that is not the commonplace, because for my brother, he can easily like switch over and move his focus. So I know that that's not a normal thing with everyone, so I realized that early on. And so then I was curious about it, and then I realized, okay, since you have this addictive personality, you need to find stuff that give you that soothing, that make you feel worse or not productive after you have kind of consumed it. So then I was like, okay, what are the things you can make yourself get addicted to? Because it's, again, like, since you have the personality, you can make it to stuff that you find productive, right? So, like, what are the things I can get myself addicted to that I would feel more accomplished or productive or joyful after having done them? So that is, like, now, since I'm doing something I actually enjoy doing in terms of work, like, that is what I'm addicted to. But then there is the time where I get too addicted to it, I get overwhelmed, I get, like, burnout. So then I go through the extra effort to go and maybe watch a movie or an episode. And I give myself that space and that freedom, because I'm like, this might be productive, but it can go to the point where it's an addiction, where it's too much. Where it's like, you know, deteriorate in your like joy and everything, like your whole body, right? Your mind and your body. So then it's like, okay, taking that break, detaching myself from it, giving myself that break to enjoy something else, have another behavior or like another habit that I build up, and then coming back to it, whether I'm not hooked on it. So I think for me also, that addictive personality is something that's very dangerous, because going through even like smoking weed, drinking, partying and stuff, I went down that path of easily getting hooked onto those, and those having such a good feeling that it like takes away all the overwhelm, that it, and it's so easy, right? Like you don't have to put that extra effort of like whether it's reading a book or like, you know, doing a puzzle or something like that. There is no extra effort. You do it and it kind of takes away all the overwhelm. So that was kind of an easy escape, and I went down that path. But then thank God for COVID that I didn't have the access to it. And then I went through the withdrawal to come to the point of like, hey, look, like you feel better now without it. What if we replace that? There's no way I can just not do it, because if I waited till COVID was done and went back out to the world, I would have got overwhelmed, and my only known like fix for that would have been the drugs. So then it was like, okay, what can I replace this with? What are the tools that are there that can replace and give me that same soothing feeling, but that won't affect me that badly? That's when I came across stuff like meditation, yoga, like which was exercising. I first started with gymming and exercising, and then landed on what I enjoyed, and breathwork, which was something that was the closest to replacing drugs, and which I'm so happy I came across, because it, that overwhelming feeling can easily be kind of taken away with breathwork. Because it's like what we did at the start, right? You said that release is something we do when we are actually relaxed. So I was like, okay, so then why not flip it? When I'm stressed, why not do the actions that I would do if I am relaxed? So then that behavior kind of tricks my body and mind to be like, hey, no, look, your body is reacting as if it's relaxed. So let's relax. And you kind of soothe yourself in that sense. And that was a really interesting practice that kind of helped, because that was something I still hadn't found a replacement for. Meditation helped me kind of get my thoughts together where I had more space to respond rather than react. So that was very helpful with emotions, because all my emotions usually led to anger. Like if I'm happy, I end up being angry. If I'm sad, I end up being angry. If I'm nervous, I end up being angry. Like,
I cry.
Yeah, I didn't even cry. I would just get angry and like lash out at someone, and while lashing out, I'd be crying. So like the only output was anger, no matter what emotion I felt. So this helped me actually explore my emotions also and be like, hey, sit and feel this. Like you feel like you're getting angry, but where did it stem from? It was something that upset you or hurt you, but like you're reacting with anger. Why not be sad and like sit in the sadness, feel the sadness, and then respond to it? Like what is something I can do to soothe that sadness that is not detrimental in a sense? I think that was my experience with having like an addictive personality, which was fun. And I want to ask you if there are any like things you feel like you're addicted to, or you consider a negative habit or unhealthy habit, as you would say, that you're trying to overcome or get rid of. That's like new and you want to get over it. Like you're trying to replace it.
I think there's two. One is still this addiction to doing, and I think like in this hustle world where you can do whatever you like and you can make your joy, your passion, your business, like we have to be careful because we are tricking ourselves. Like stress is stress on the body and you need that time to rest. And I find it very hard to rest, very, very hard. I have to schedule in my rest. I have to schedule it into my diary. I have to block out days, and that's the way how it works for me. I'm very good at doing, but rest is one of the biggest ones. One of the biggest habits actually I'm really proud of that I have managed to skip recently is coffee. And I still have a cup of coffee in the afternoons if I want one, maybe a couple of times a week. But my biggest one was waking up in the morning and having a coffee. And before I met my partner, I'd like managed to not be addicted to coffee. And I was so proud of myself. And then about almost 3 years ago, we met. And I always said to him, like, I didn't drink coffee until I met you, and you drink coffee, and now you make me drink coffee. And about 4 months ago, for his own personal reasons, he decided he's just going to stop coffee overnight. Like, that even scares me just thinking about it. Like, I have such an attachment to things that I find it takes a lot of conscious effort not to be so emotionally attached to things. And he's like, I'm going to quit coffee. And I'm like, the lie I've told myself for the last 2 years is just the fact a lie, and I'm my own responsibility. And he stopped it overnight. Boom, done. Didn't even think about it. Made a decision. It took me a week to speak to myself, like, this week you're not going to have a coffee tomorrow. And it took me 7 days to get to that point. And then after 7 days, I was like, okay, I'm ready to have a tea. And then I had a tea and I was like, oh, this is great. And, you know, then I had a few teas in a row. And then I felt the difference of not having caffeine on an empty stomach. And it has changed everything. Like, I am a feeling person. I feel a lot. I can get very overwhelmed. I feel the caffeine high. Like, my partner, he I'm like, but you know when you have a coffee and you feel high? And he's like, no, it's just a cup of coffee. It's like a drink. If I have like six, then yeah. And I'm like one and I'm like buzzing, like lights are coming into one eye, and I'm like so up there on my fix. But after having tea a few times, I really felt the difference, and then that cemented it in, right? That was like, I feel the difference. I'm not as jittery. I'm now, there's so many benefits about having coffee post eating, not an hour and a half before you're waking up. Like, I'd been reading all this stuff for a long time, but it took me a long time to separate, and now I won't have a coffee in the morning because I feel shit. Like, I honestly do. I just can't. My thoughts are everywhere, and I'm just like too much energy contained in my body that I've got nowhere to put it. Like, it's a horrible feeling. And now I've learned that feeling, I've managed to stick to a good habit. And I think that's the best thing, is like observing how do you feel in your body when you're doing something that isn't great. Same when I quit smoking. Like, I managed to quit smoking at a very pivotal time in my life where I'd just gone back home for COVID. My mom had died that evening, and I'd gone back to live with my sister for who knows how long. It was the first day of COVID, and I was like, if you ever need a reason to break a habit, it's right now. My sister had just had her daughter, she had a niece, and I said to myself, I don't want to be that aunt. I don't want to be in the garden having a cigarette. Like, that is not the person I want to be. And I stopped that day, and that was a monumental, like, emotional change to be able to make that break. And that's also a really good time to make breaks. Like, when you break your routines, every time I get on a flight, I say to myself, what am I wanting to let go of before I land? And I make a choice of what's been annoying me, maybe my thoughts or something. And I'm like, I'm allowing this physical change to help me let go of something. But it's kind of, I think I lost my tangent of where I went there. But like, having that moment when you have a feeling, acknowledge it. How do I feel? Do I feel better? Do I feel worse? Okay, I feel this feeling. And then that's when you have an emotional response to a feeling, that's when it comes hardwired a little bit easier, because you kind of really embody it. Mm. You don't just know it's right. Everyone tells you it's right. You've embodied the feeling. It has become you. And with coffee, that's my proudest one. I'm actually really proud of that. And at the moment, I've actually got really good at resting. It's really funny. I always tell myself, like, I'm going to have some time off. I'm like, oh, I'm going to have some time off. And it's like something I say all the time. And I take like 2 days off. And I realize I'm not having time off. I'm having time off from myself.
Yeah.
It's like what I need to verbalize to be like, give myself permission, I guess. Like, just you're having time off from stressing yourself out. Because again, with having your own businesses you do, it's great fun, but you have to keep that boundary. And that boundary is so, so important. Like, when is a no? Oh, I can be doing it all the time. I don't know. You need those healthy boundaries of like rest, time off, time to not think about things, time for other stuff that brings you joy. Otherwise, you end up just in this loop of resentment and just work, so to speak. But definitely coffee is the biggest one. And also a little bit breath work. When I really got into breath work, I allowed it to be something that I was like, I need to do breath work every day. And I'm kind of at a point now where I'm like, I have these tools there when I need them. I don't need to do them all the time to make me a better person. And that's been a lovely detachment, because I think also when you get into something, you have that energy, you're really into it, you want to know more, that curiosity comes in, but we're not careful, as creatures of habit, and addiction is just habit, right?
Yeah.
And then it's outsourcing it. So it's like allowing to step back and be like, these things are here to aid me when I need it, not the other way around.
That's interesting. Two things you mentioned throughout the podcast are very interesting about your environment around you influencing you, and then how you spoke about the event thing, where like when you go to a new location, you're like, oh, like what am I going to change here? It's kind of like an event. So those are two of the points that are spoken in Atomic Habits by James Clear, if I'm not mistaken. And he breaks it down. So from Paradox of Choice, I understood, like I got the knowledge or the understanding of choices and like how they impact your psychology. But then through Atomic Habits, he gives you like a proper breakdown of tools you can use. So like one is that like influence in your environment so that it reduces the barriers for the, in your mind, good habits and increases the barrier for the bad habits. So that then, you know, you're more like lenient towards the good habit. Then another one he talks about, like make it a event or do it, start the habit on a special day. Like whether it's the start of the year, a start of the month, or like when you land in a new location. He's like, do it then, because then when you go through it and it becomes boring to that point of you lose that interest and the curiosity and that drive or the motivation you had at the start of it, when you lose that and it becomes so normal and monotonous, you can look back because you can easily remember the day and see how far you have come and how long you have been doing it for, which can motivate you to do it for longer and like push yourself more. And another thing he mentions is habit stacking, which is if you currently have let's say you wake up every morning and have a glass of water, like that's something you do every day without fail. To that habit, add another one. Like after you drink the glass of water, what is the next activity you do? Maybe you go and brush your teeth. Then onto that, you add another one. So like that, you habit stack, because that drinking water is definitely going to happen. You already do it. So you're making the other activity easier. And then there also it comes into play with setting your environment so that doing the other activity is easier rather than maybe going to bed. Like so that maybe your glass of water is not right next to your bed. You change it because you'll anyway feel like you need the water. You go to where it's closer to, say, brushing your teeth, if that's what you want to add on. So he talks about very interesting tools that you can use to implement and replace your behaviors rather than getting rid of them. And I think that's a really interesting book to read as well, because that helped me. And trying the event thing, now I'm realizing like how impactful that is, because there were so many things I have tried to change in the past, but like when it gets to that point where it's boring, I'm just like, oh, I don't even remember how long I've done. It feels like maybe a month, maybe two. And then when people ask me, oh, how long have you not like changed this habit, I'm like, oh, I can't remember, maybe like a month. Like it doesn't give that same like oomph. But now the habits that I've changed, I made sure I started them either the start of the month or like on a specific day, like a special day to me. And like now when people ask me, when it's so easy for me to go back to like, oh, it has been 2 years, oh, it has been 3 years. And then I'm just like, that's a lot. That's a long time. And then they'll also, most people like motivate and they're like, whoa, that's a long time. That's amazing. Like, you know, well done. That gives you that energy of like, oh, this is a good thing. Like, you know, people are supporting me as well. And it gives you the drive to keep the habits and try out new habits. And it's fun to play around with when you know the tools that you can try out. So I feel like for me, that was a really interesting book that I came across that helped me implement the habits and like change that up. And I think for me, a recent addiction that I'm trying to stop is doom scrolling, because I checked my screen time. And that was really bad. On some days, it's like 10 hours or 12 hours. And I was like, you don't do anything during the day? But then I realized while I'm working, even sometimes I've kept my phone and it's just playing the same reel over and over. I just need that sound in the background.
What's doom scrolling?
Like where you're just purposelessly scrolling on your phone. Like, you know, it's not like, oh, I'm looking for something or entertainment. I'm just like to kill time out of boredom, just like going through. That's doom scrolling. So I've started to do that. So I'm like, okay, I need to find a replacement for that. And now my newest thing is like because I feel like I play it for white noise, but then when I realize it's the same thing playing and it's annoying, I tend to start looking at the phone rather than like getting rid of it and doing the work. So now I play like classical music because it doesn't have words and it's not that like impactful that can distract me. It's just like white noise in the background. So that has been helpful. But I realize I also have a habit of, if I'm working and I get overwhelmed, I so naturally turn around, my phone is right here, take it and go to it. And it's like two taps and I'm in Instagram. Like it happens so subconsciously that now I'm like, from atomic habits, I'm realizing, okay, I need to change that environment because I don't even realize my hand going and like all of a sudden my phone is in front of my face and by the time it has come, it's on Instagram. So I was like, oh, that's a bit scary and I don't like that habit. So I want to change the location of my phone so that then maybe replace it with a Rubik's Cube or something that I can fidget with. So that then I can not put my focus there, but satisfy that need of like stimulation, but still focus on the work. So I think that book has really helped me like know my options of, okay, what can I do to get rid of the habit, to change it? Otherwise, I'll just be like clueless because I just know the habit. I don't know how to replace it, what I can do, what's important to focus on. Because another thing, I feel like a lot of people will have this, checking your phone as soon as you wake up. So I had that habit because I wanted to check the time. And because I wake up at like 6 or 5, it's too dark to see the clock on my wall. So I tend to take the phone and I'm already in bed. So it's like next thing is like my finger automatically goes to Instagram and stuff. So I'm like, this is so easy. And then it's like 9 in the morning, I'm still in bed. And I didn't feel productive or good or happy throughout the rest of the day. So he mentioned trying that. He was like, keep your phone in a different room or like somewhere where you have to get out of bed to check it, if your clock and alarm is on that. So to put the alarm off or to check the time, you have to get out of bed. So now each time it's like still dark and I'm like, what is it, like 3 in the morning or 6 in the morning? I have to get out of bed to go to my table to check it. And then if it's 3, I'm like, oh, I can sleep for another 3 hours, go to sleep. But if it's like 5:30 or 6, usually it's like, 5:30, I have half an hour, I can take a small snooze, but that never happens. Yeah. You go through another sleep cycle or you break the sleep cycle you got into and you don't feel good. So then I'm like, 5:30 is only half an hour. Now I have to walk back to the bed, get into bed and get back into that sleep state because now I've moved and like got up and looked at a screen. So I'm like, do I rather do that and not feel that great when I wake up? Because I'll be otherwise like, oh, I'm late or like I've broken the sleep cycle. Or do I just go down and have my glass of water and then do my morning routine? And it sounds better to do the morning routine because I know I feel better after it. The going back to bed and trying to sleep and all of that, the end product is never a pleasant feeling. So I'm in that position where I get to make that decision. Both are as difficult. It's not that one is easier than the other. So then it like helps you. And those were tools that were like magical to me. I was like, and they sounded silly at the start because I'm like, that small thing, like keeping my phone there and me just getting up and walking, I'll still go back to bed. But just being there, it gives an opportunity to like, okay, I'm here now. Like it's as much effort doing both. And like you start questioning and thinking, and the fact that they helped, I was like, this is amazing. Like such a small thing you think is doesn't make an impact, but then like it was such a big change. So like I think knowing those and knowing your options or like what you have control of and what you can change is very helpful to implementing the actions. And it has to be implemented. It's going to be tough at the start because it's something new and different. But trying to find those things that can make the new thing easier and making the old habit like a bit harder and like extra steps is like a good practice, I would say.
I think so. I think it's also like finding the motivation. Like you say, like if you said there about having like starting on a date that has maybe some meaning or something, it's like having that emotional response within you will make it easier because you have the motivation, you have the reason why you're doing it, and finding that, like, you know, it's like having a goal or wanting a certain outcome, it'll become easier. And it's funny because I charge my phone the other side. I leave my phone on the other side of the room. So I get up every morning, I turn it on to snooze, and I get straight back into bed again. But it works because I'm up. I'm first up, and then I fall asleep again for another hour, and it's delicious. But what I did for the whole kind of like social, like being on social media and like late at night, I put my started to putting. This was a while ago. I didn't do it anymore. I'm quite good at restricting myself now because I did this. At 10 o'clock, I'd put my phone onto airplane mode. And I wouldn't put my phone onto turn it back off again until like 8, 9 in the morning again. And I really allowed myself that cutoff. And I knew that no notifications were coming up, no nothing. Like at night, my phone is on silent. It's off. I don't want ping, ping all through the night. Like people are like, oh, my phone wakes me up. And it's like, why is it on? Like, why is your screen right next to you? Like, you're going to look for it. You're going to search for it because it gives you that nice dopamine hit. You're addicted to it. Like, we're all addicted to our phones. We are.
Yeah.
We so are. Like, you say that moment where it's like the phone is in your hand and you're like, I was doing something. And then you're like, no. And like, that marker of where you're like, I want to look at my phone. And like, I always say to a lot of my clients, it's like, you know, that habit stacking thing is really important. Like, okay, you want to look at your phone. Okay, take a breath first. Like, regulate yourself, take a breath, and then look at your phone. You know, you're drinking too much caffeine. Okay, go and sit and take 10 breaths, and then have your cup of coffee. Like, create the distance between what you're doing automated to allow a choice to come in. And that's what it is, no? It's the choice. Like, it's always going to be harder to pull yourself out of bed in the morning. It always going to be. But that disappointment of when you say you're going to do something and don't is one of the things that is neurologically most damaging to us. When we say, I'm going to get up today and I'm going to go for a run, and then when the run comes to it and you don't go, that disappointment that you feel is very real. Mm-hmm. And then you become discouraged. And then you normally just think, why bother? I'll just stay in this kind of the way I am because I can't accede to anything greater because I tried. And it's realizing that and being like, no, like, if I want to do something different, I have to be forgiving on myself. Like, it is going to be difficult. It is going to be resistance coming up. We are so emotionally attached to so many things we do. And I was listening to a really interesting podcast the other day with Nicole from Nicole's Neuroscience, and she was on about the difference between a growth mindset and a fixed mindset. And a fixed mindset, very much how I'm learning not to be, is where you attach a certain outcome onto you. I did something wrong. I did something right. And that is how the outcome, that's your fixed outcome. And then like a growth mindset is, what can I learn from the situation? And that's the difference. When we can allow ourselves, instead of going from a fixed mindset to a growth mindset, and we let go of that emotional attachment to I've done something right or wrong or good or bad, and that's attached to my worth as a human being, we can really start to learn from our things. Because if we know the brain works through repetition and reinforcement, and the more we do things, it has no bias between that, it's up to us to make that decision, we should really start to look at ourselves subjectively from a greater perspective and be like, ah, what did this lesson learn me? But we're so attached to the emotion and it holds on to us that we don't. And I think it's the shame. There's that shame that's put onto us that we did it right, we weren't good enough, we're a disappointment. All these things that we have to learn to forgive ourselves for and be like, how can I look at this situation objectively? And another really interesting thing she said about a really powerful thing to go from when we touched on this before about rehearsing, about like when you're wanting to change a personality trait, like who am I? What do I like about myself? What's giving me energy? What's taking away energy? And what's no longer serving me? What you get to choose all these things. And then who's the person I want to be? Maybe what habits do they have? You know, and go out, get inspired, get curious, and then visualize. The power of this visualization and rehearsing, because your brain doesn't know the difference between reality and visualization, allow that mental rehearsal. Allow yourself to get really specific on the person you want to be. And the more you do that, the easier your brain is going to think it's possible for you. Because if your brain wants you to stay safe, to stay in the known, to stay in control, all based around this survival mode, if you show it that there's other possibilities that are available for you and you believe that it's available for you to do, then you'll be able to do it. It will become easier and there'll be less resistance.
Yeah, and I feel to add to that, it's about building that trust, right? Like, because you won't believe it at the start and it will seem like that is not you, that is not who you are. Yes, there are other people who have done it, but like, you are not that person. They had something special or something different. But then if you keep doing those actions over and over, you become that person. Like, you are building that trust with yourself. And I think it starts with the small stuff. Because if you want to, we spoke about this in the previous episode as well. If you want to accomplish something great and you are breaking the promises you kept to yourself in the short run, like whether it's just waking up early or going to the gym, you'll be like, look, like, you're not someone who can keep those small promises or accomplish those small activities that you promise yourself. How are you going to do the big things? And that's where you kind of look down on yourself and you have broken that trust with yourself. So it's building those small things. Like, if you said you are going to work out in the, like, you wake up and you're going to work out, like, make sure that action happens. And, like, use the tools, read the books, use the tools that can help you experiment with different tools that might help you. Because, for example, James Clear in his book says, like, one of the things is make it a, I don't know if it's a 2 minute or a 20 second habit, like 20 second activity, where if you're thinking of going to the gym, there is a long process before the gym. So many hurdles where you have to first get dressed, get in your vehicle, go to the gym, like, then go into the gym, do your warm up, like, so many steps to get to the gym first, even before you start working out. So how do you reduce those barriers? He's like, okay, make it, I'm going to wake up. In the night, I'm going to keep my gym clothes out and my shoes out, so that then it's easier where you don't have to search the cupboard for the outfit you're going to wear, make that decision while you're groggy and sleepy. So you do that, you prepare. You do it ahead of time when you actually have the clarity to do it. And then when you wake up, your activity is not you're going to go to the gym, it's I'm going to wear my shoes. That you can do in like 2 minutes, in like 20 seconds. After you wear your shoes, then you get dressed. Then the next step, the next habit stacking is I'm going to wear the clothes. You wear the clothes. Then it's like, I'm dressed, am I going to get out of my clothes and get into bed? Or am I going to, like, go to the gym since I'm already dressed? So then you're bringing that equal ground of, oh, the good habit and the bad habit, it's equal effort, right? And then do those things and push yourself through that initial set and build that trust. Then, like you mentioned, all those possibilities, like, come to fruition and you, like, start seeing, like, oh my God, if I could do this and I promised myself I'll do this and I actually got it done, what else can I accomplish? Like, how far can I push this? How much further can I go? And I feel like that's the stepping stone to trust in yourself and then seeing your full potential, right? And, like, approaching that self maybe you enjoy or you want to be. And, like, seeing that you can be as great as other people. Because they're also people at the end of the day. They just kept the promises they made to themselves, right? They just kept those promises and pushed as far as they could.
And I think it's also, like, you take the action, you know, like, if you want to do a habit, like, okay, I'm going to start running or exercising, but you can take the same thing for maybe like an internalized habit. I'm going to go back to people pleasing. Like, okay, I'm a natural. I've been a people pleaser for 20 years. I thought of this analogy yesterday, and I thought about, you know, like when you get a pencil and a piece of paper and you draw a line on a piece of paper and then you just draw over and over and over and over that line, you're going to make a, you know, probably make a big mark on the paper. You're probably going to rip the paper. You're going to go through the table as well. That's the kind of neural pathways that we're like dealing with, because it's such a repeated pattern for such a long time. It's so ingrained in you. It's just autopilot. So if you're someone and you're a people pleaser and your habit is just to say yes, like before you've even said anything, like before you, that answer just comes out. It's not even like you thought about it. It's just, of course I can do it. What do you need? Like, rehearse at home saying no. Come up with those practice sentences, like, how am I going to say no? And like, I've done this. Okay, how am I going to practice saying it nicely without sounding like an idiot? And to build that trust, how are we going to rewrite this? And if I've been doing this behavior for 20 years, I'm not going to change it overnight. It's just not going to happen. It's not an even fight. You've got to allow yourself the grace of, like, how can I rehearse for this? How can I practice this? I'm going to stand in front of the mirror saying, I'm sorry, I'm really busy at the moment, I can't help you. And because if we rehearse, we have a better chance, because when, you know, something comes up and we're triggered, you know, okay, you asked me to help you and I'm really busy, I don't have time, but I'm a people pleaser, and you say, oh, Jess, can you please help me? I'm going to be triggered by an emotional response. And in that exact moment, all the blood goes to the right-hand side of your brain, and that means the emotional side of your brain is activated and the logistical side of your brain is like gone out the window. So you're going to be triggered. And you're going to act from that triggered response based on the past or your coping mechanisms. So to allow us even to have a choice in that moment, if you rehearse what you're going to say, you take that breath and you pause, and then that gives you that moment. It's almost like having the phone away from the bed. You have a moment to make a choice. Okay, I've got the rehearse. We've practiced this, brain. We're not going to say yes. Regulate through a nice big breath and let it go. And then be like, okay, how do I want to respond differently? Because to be a different person, you have to act differently, respond differently. And I'm not saying no one's good enough as they are, and we're all innate, we're all wonderful, we're all unique. But if you want to make changes, you have to make an actual change. Mm-hmm. You have to learn how to do things differently.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good point to end the podcast on, the episode on. Is there any other tools you want to provide people with? I think you've covered quite a lot of it.
I think we've covered a lot. I think the first thing is becoming aware of traits that you're doing, like bringing that awareness in to who am I, and just observe yourself. Observe yourself, like, what habits am I doing? Is it serving me? Is this the person I want to be? And start there. And like you said, breath work is an amazing tool. I really like how you explained it earlier that, like, for me, meditation taught me who is my mind, or what is my mind, or who is not my mind. And it really allowed me to separate from my intrusive thoughts and kind of change them. And breathwork allowed me to come back to the body. Breathwork taught me to feel, that feelings are safe, and all those feelings. And I really like how you explained about anger. I often think of anger as like the defense emotion before all the other emotions. It's like, you're not coming in, like, we're not gonna let you feel. And because it's kind of like, it's an emotion, but it's like far more complex than just the anger. Yeah. It's like the front line of defense. Mm. And breathwork really allowed me to come back to my body, allowed me to learn to regulate my feelings, allowed me to regulate my nervous system, build up a tolerance to stress, because like overwhelm is just stress. So it's a really powerful tool, and it takes 5 minutes to regulate your nervous system. So all I invite you to do is get curious, find out who you are, what you love about yourself, what no longer serves you, what you want to change. Bring in some breath work, 5 minutes a day. You can find 5 minutes and just enjoy it all. So we'll end it there. And I'll say, as always, thank you so much for joining us this month. Look forward to sharing with you next month. And as always, remember to breathe. This podcast is a Creator Cast production.